Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of the All Pest Cast. I am Matt Major from Growth Mode Content, and I am lucky enough to host these incredible folks and kick off their very first podcast, where we tell you all about their awesome locally owned business, All Pest of Syracuse. Without further ado, let's jump in and go ahead and go right ahead and introduce yourselves, and we'll start talking about the business. Ray, yeah. Tell us who you are.
Ray Aldrich, one of the owners of All Pest of Syracuse. Been doing pest control for about 13 years now.
Awesome.
I'm Kelly, Ray's wife, and I've been doing pest control. I'm co-owner, and I've been doing pest control now for about 6 years.
We're going to jump right in. So did you marry into the pest control industry, or did you come together before that?
He worked for his parents, who started the company. And when his mom met me, she kept saying, "You guys should buy it. You guys should buy it. You'd be great."
Oh, wow.
And I kept saying, "No." And then once the kids started getting older, I was like, "Okay, I might as well do something." So
that's awesome.
We decided to buy it from them.
So how long has All Pest been around altogether?
2001 was when
2000.
We started. 2000.
Your mom started, yeah.
Yeah, end of 2000. It was only ever my parents. My mother in the office, my father was in the field. My father worked at a plant for 25 years, and he was in his mid-40s. They closed down. Wasn't expecting it. Didn't know it was coming, so didn't really know what to do at that point. My aunt and uncle do the same thing, do pest control in the Watertown area, so they got into it in the mid-90s or so. So he went and trained under them and then opened it and started his own thing here in Syracuse.
I love that. That local family-owned, figure-it-out entrepreneur style, right?
And yeah.
Like you said, just thrown into it and what do? Figure it out for himself. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And obviously grew it into a business that was good enough to last for you to take over and then grow. What made you? You talked about you're hesitant to take it over. What made you decide that it was a good thing for you to continue with?
He would come home and talk about jobs and stuff that he was at. And I've always had learning disabilities, dyslexia and everything. And I have a really hard time learning from a book. And anything he would tell me was starting to stick in my head and I would just get it. And then I just became more and more interested in it. And his mom was done. She really did not want to do it anymore. She was also working a full-time job on top of it. So she was very persistent as well. And asking. And so I started doing phones for them and just enjoyed talking to clients and started loving it.
I think that's great. There's so many businesses that people don't necessarily realize are like long standing family businesses, and folks get ready to retire and they just shut them down.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. And to see somebody able to pass on what they've built and let you take it from there is awesome.
Or they a lot of times end up selling out to one of the bigger companies,
yeah.
One of the bigger national companies. We get offers every other year,
yeah.
From the big companies to sell our client list. And yeah, there are times that it's appealing, but then honestly, I think about what the difference would be for our customers going from the service that they're used to and become accustomed to, what they would be getting if they went with one of those.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's something that so many people see in so many industries is these big companies coming in. And you certainly can't blame a local business owner who builds something and wants to retire. That's the point, right? But what is the difference from a customer's perspective of what you do versus the biggest name guys that you see on TV?
Yeah, the main thing I would say is that we care. It's a direct correlation. The service that they get, they're not calling and getting some hotline that is an automated system that eventually they talk to a customer service representative. They're calling my wife,
right?
And they're talking to me about it. Our whole basis for what we do is we want to solve people's problems with as little chemical interference or interaction as possible. We have 4 children. We know how people feel about their own children and their pets,
sure.
and all that. I also don't want to just be locking people into contracts where they feel like they're paying for a service that they're not receiving, or that it's something unnecessary that they wasted their money on.
And I think from the office side too, we really take the money out of it. We all, obviously you need money to run a business, but to keep that in the back of your mind. So the client comes first. What do they actually need? What is the actual problem? What were they told from someone else the problem was? Is that accurate? And really care more about the situation and the people that we're seeing than we do about what income it brings.
I think that's one of the things that is the best from any perspective is that, yes, you have high levels of customer service, but folks are like, anybody can say that. These guys on the TV commercials can say that. Right. But the reality is they call and get the owner.
Right.
And there's no getting around that. Yeah. And I would say even if anybody had a question or an issue, the ability to get to the folks that actually do the stuff or even just the same person twice on the phone is huge.
Right.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. Another big difference is we try to educate people as much as possible. So rather than just coming in, fix the problem, pay me and disappear, I try to, especially in a lot of instances, there are things that the homeowner could be doing on their own to mitigate the issue or something they could just very cheaply remedy with their house that in the future wouldn't cause less problems.
Big example of that is fleas. We see this a lot. People will call because they start to see fleas. And with that's more on the homeowner or tenant to do the work than it is really for us. And we always, unless
they need
the
to
problem,
shave their dogs, right?
Just vacuuming and cleaning constantly. And it is a lot of work, but we would rather you try that first if your problem isn't that bad than us come and have to put chemical all over your home.
Sure.
So if there's things like that we can do, we would rather teach them and say, hey, try this. And then after 14 days, if this is still an issue, call us back. But we would rather you try this before we come in with our chemicals.
That's fair. That's great. You've mentioned a couple times now the chemicals that are involved in your business. Obviously, that's how it works. You don't go around with fly swatters to every insect in somebody's house, as much as that might be fun. Whack-a-mole. It's probably time consuming, but talk to me a little bit about the chemicals you use and why you choose what you do. Because I know you mentioned in terms of something that separates you. What is it? And what about your knowledge of these things is also an advantage when you go to these jobs?
Yeah. So there's all different kinds, everything from dusts and powders to liquid products to wettable powders that get mixed differently than the liquid products. And really, I definitely try to use the least amount of chemicals possible in order to take care of a problem. I can't tell, I've seen instances, especially in situations like senior living facilities or community housing or state-funded housing, things like that, where I've come in behind other companies and there's almost no regard for the people that are living there, wow. You know, especially in a senior living facility, and the technician from whatever other place had put a perimeter around the room of this dust where there's a 90-year-old woman living and she's going to be kicking that stuff up and inhaling it
right.
And all the time. It's all situational. So there are product. First of all, pretty much everything we use is labeled and tested and meant to be used in environments like schools, hospitals, office buildings. Usually, for the most part, it's just a matter of not coming into contact with it while it's being applied.
Sure.
Certain things, if we're treating a house, the interior of a home, we need homeowners or residents to be out of the house for a 3 to 4 hour window while we're doing that. So there's no potential overlap in them coming into contact with anything. But, you know, there are some products that are meant to be used initially just for that specific instance in that time period. And there's other products that have a longer residual effect where, you know, a lot of what we do with our annual customers, we come in the spring and we'll treat the exterior of the house and we guarantee that service for the rest of the year. So, you know, in instances like that, I'm obviously using a product that has a longer residual effect, will continue working for months at a time rather than just being effective while it's being applied. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. Every product comes with its own product label. And some of these things, it's an 8-ounce bottle and the product label is 95 pages thick.
Yeah.
And it's very detailed as far as when and where and how to apply things. But I always want to make sure that they know why I'm doing what I'm doing and what they need to do to keep themselves safe for that time period. Yeah, there's tons of different application methods. And we don't necessarily, in a lot of situations, have to come in and apply something throughout your entire home.
Yeah.
We can target different things in different areas and
sure.
be a little bit less invasive, if you will.
Yeah.
And especially with landlords and things like that and commercial properties, I always say on the phone, we are not the company to call if you just want us to come in and spray chemical and get a note for codes. It's not going to happen. If it's not necessary, we're not doing it. We're sure. going to do what per label of what we need to do. So if you're looking for someone to do that for you or just write you a letter for codes, we're not it. Or either take care of the problem or don't hire us.
That's the only approach that I could imagine somebody should take.
Yeah.
It's interesting how many people in every business, right? That's one of the things that we've seen. And it's one of the reasons that local family-owned small businesses are so popular. It's not just that we're doing business with our neighbors, but it's the fact that you do get that level of human service. And it's so great that you see that and you have people that know what they're doing and when to not do something, which is a part that you've mentioned, I don't think gives enough attention. There's times when you don't put down anything. And that's because that's the right call and you have the expertise to make that call. So we talked a bit about you, and I know, Ray, that you do a lot of this stuff out in the field, but you're not the only one in the team that does that, right? You got some help out in the world as well?
Yeah, we have other technicians and apprentices, a couple of which being our oldest son and his girlfriend, and then we have a few other seasonal employees that are, I'd say 75% of our business is done from spring to fall.
Sure.
That's when we're definitely fully staffed at that point, but yeah, it's unfortunately can't always be me that shows up at the customers' houses, but it's very extensive training. The training process is very in-depth, especially in New York State. New York and California are by far the most strict when it comes to pesticide laws and training.
And I think we're even a little bit more strict than
absolutely.
other companies. What the training process actually is, we usually are like, if they're not ready, we're making them stay in the truck longer with him.
Sure.
Because it is pesticides and it's our customers' homes.
Right.
It's your biggest thing that you spend money on. So we want to make sure that's always protected.
That, and for the most part, most of our apprentices or technicians are working under my license.
Yeah.
They're not their own licensed applicator or anything. That's a years-long process, not only with our reputation with our business, but legally, in the eyes of our overseeing bodies, they're working.
They're you, essentially.
They're me. Paper, they're working with my license. But not only that, for the same reason, I wouldn't necessarily ever want to sell to a larger company. I don't want the level of service to change, whether it's me or one of my employees. I want we have customers that have been with us for 20 years or more, and I don't want them to think just because we're growing that anything's going to change what they see on a daily basis.
That's one of those big challenges in business in general that I think people don't talk about enough is we're doing great and everybody loves to see that, and everybody loves to create new jobs and see new jobs created. But at the same time, how do you maintain that level of service when you become a bigger organization? So it's interesting to see all kinds of companies work with that. It sounds like you've got a good system, especially when you have the fact that you even mention apprentice tells me that you have a system in place that not everybody is swift enough to have. If you could just a little bit, how does that work for folks that become an apprentice? How long do you typically work before you're, I guess, not called an apprentice anymore?
So first day on the job, before they're even allowed in the truck with him, they have to do their safety course, which is an 8-hour safety course that the DEC requires. Once that's done, they can then go in the truck with him. They just follow him around for the first couple of weeks, get a hang of it. And then depending on who they are and how fast they're catching on and how confident he feels, which it's very hard. He is very tough. He has high expectations.
You got to have standards, right?
Yeah, and he doesn't like to let go of control until he knows that they're going to be able to handle it. And then at that point, he will let them just start talking with customers, putting, chemical on in the homes and things like that. And then it's his call when he tells me that they're ready, but usually not any time before a month. It's a month of training usually.
Yeah. So the
pretty intense.
Yeah, the state's requirement is 40 hours of hands-on on-site training, but I don't think anybody's gone out on their own, not for us anyways, has gone out on their own after only 40 hours.
Then that's, again, just the initial step, but there's a couple different levels of licenses as far as pesticide application. And to go from an apprentice to being a fully licensed pesticide applicator is, if you do everything as quickly as possible, is a minimum 3-year process. At that point, if you have someone in your home that's a fully licensed applicator, they've at least been in the field for 2.5 to 3 years at least.
Okay. Wow. What's interesting is you talk about all those requirements and that training and everything for the people that do that. I think of the pesticide shelf at the local store, right?
Yeah.
And you walk in there and we've talked about your competition, but there's, of course, the do-it-yourselfers that I think everybody's probably fallen into. And when we walk into the store, we see that entire aisle of this variety of things, similar to, I'm sure, your bank of chemicals, and having no knowledge of what to choose. You pick the fanciest color box or the funniest looking dead bug, yeah, right? And go with it. What's some advice for people? And is your advice, just don't ever go down that route and call a professional?
So no, it's not that they can't ever do anything there on their own, but there are multiple situations where those over-the-counter products are going to make the situation worse.
Okay.
The main one being yellow jackets. So,
oh, wow.
Which is a type of hornet. And if they almost never have their nest exposed to the elements, so their nests are, if anyone ever says they had ground bees, if you had a nest in the ground somewhere, those are almost always yellow jackets. And they will typically find a cavity somewhere to nest in. So what we see a lot is nests behind people's siding or in their foundation, and all they see are what they call bees, but yellow jackets going in and out of a hole in the side of their house.
Yep.
So they go to the store and they buy a can of wasp and hornet spray. And if the nest is exposed, if the nest is hanging from a tree, I use over-the-counter wasp and hornet spray. Okay. I don't use anything that you need to be licensed
and
to
I
use.
Tell clients, I'm like, hey, unless you're not a do-it, you can handle this yourself. If they seem like a DIY person, sure. I'm like, if you want to save the $100, you can just do this yourself. But if they're going in somewhere,
yeah.
Please
so
don't.
my rule I tell people is that if you can't see the actual nest, don't try to do anything.
Okay.
Because I've seen people. Well, first of all, the wasp and hornet spray needs to be applied directly to the nest itself. So if you just spray that entry point, it actually drives them in the opposite direction.
Oh, further in.
They'll chew through drywall. They'll chew through the mortar in your foundation.
Wow.
They'll find a way out. And hundreds of calls a year we have where people have a living room filled with yellow jackets.
If they try to take care of it.
Or the other thing we see a lot is usually the husband will say we don't need to pay someone, and he'll read online to wait until midnight to address it, and they'll go out and find that hole that they were disappearing into and just caulk it shut, or use the foam sealant,
sure,
and seal it shut, and just assume they're going to die in there. And then they wake up again with a bedroom filled.
Yeah, they find a way out, right? Yeah.
I like to explain it like a house. I always tell clients, I'm like, their nest is just like your home. There's a front door. They go through that front door. They then have an entryway. After that entryway, they're going down a hallway. They're either going up, down, left or right. So you spraying that entryway is only messing up their pheromone trail, and you're just driving them farther in. So I always try to give them a little bit of an idea of, think of it as a house.
Yeah.
You don't walk in and then leave right there. You don't stay right there at your front door, and either do they.
That's a great analogy. I love that.
But
it makes a lot of sense.
And as far as the over-the-counter products, the other situations where it can really be almost detrimental are the more serious or nastier things like bed bugs and cockroaches.
Okay.
Especially them. So bed bugs and cockroaches have been around, bed bugs since the dinosaurs or longer. So
oh, wow.
They have developed a real serious immune system, I guess you could say. So they develop a resistance to products in one generation. If you go to Home Depot and buy the combination ant and roach spray and start spraying it all over the house or the apartment, it might look like it's working because you see a few die.
Sure.
But let's say you go buy one of those foggers, which I never recommend people use foggers. The nature of them, they sit in the middle of your room and they disperse chemicals into the air and they cover all of your surfaces with chemicals.
Sure.
Unnecessarily. They're not actually getting to where they need to get to. But okay, let's say you use one of those and you kill half of the cockroaches in your house. The other half are now resistant to that that active ingredient. Their offspring are born resistant to it. They're every now and then they'll come into contact with somewhere you did spray and just build up a little bit more of a resistance. So if I go into a home that I know or that has either one of those cockroaches or bed bugs, and they tell me they've been using things for the last year or 6 months and it works but doesn't, then I know it's going to be a longer road as far as we're concerned, as far as getting rid of them.
That's incredible. Are there on TV, you mentioned foggers, and that made me think, you see on TV and movies this thing where they put like a circus tent over the whole house and do that. Is that a real thing? Is that something that happens?
Yeah, that's called fumigation.
Okay.
Much more common south of New York State.
I see.
One of the main things it's used for is termites, and we don't really have termites in upstate New York. It can happen. I've seen in one instance of them in 13 years.
Oh, wow.
The unfortunate thing is some of the larger companies will use people's fear of termites to sell them services that they don't need, or will take something like carpenter ants, which can be a relatively easy fix for a professional, and they'll tell someone that they have termites, which ends up being thousands of dollars more to treat than carpenter ants are.
So what you're saying is if we see those little wood shavings holes in things that clearly some creature has made and dug in, it might not be termites. Could be something else.
In upstate New York, it's almost never termites.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, termites don't leave behind wood shavings, so... Oh. Termites actually...
They're much tidier.
For a termite, the wood is their food source.
I see.
So they actually ingest the wood.
That makes sense.
The only thing you find left behind by termites is their feces. But anything we have around here, carpenter ants, carpenter bees, they just live in the wood. They don't actually eat
it.
So they discard the wood as they're making their nest. So yeah, if you ever find a pile of sawdust and don't know where it came from and are willing to... If you pick some of it up and actually look at it, if it's from either one, carpenter ants or carpenter bees, it won't be clean, if that makes any sense. There will be little... So as carpenter ants are making their nest and hollowing out those cavities, if one of the ants dies, they just chew him up and spit him out, just like the wood.
Yeah.
So
you'll
actually find parts and pieces of ants. You'll see little, almost legs, like there's pepper sprinkled in with the sawdust. So if it's just pure sawdust, it was probably a fluke and has nothing to do with insects. But if it looks dirty or there's other things in there other than the wood pieces, then
yeah,
you got a problem.
Wow. So there's a million bugs. And throughout the course of this podcast, we'll, of course, talk about all kinds of different things. And that's... I've already learned more in the last couple minutes than I've known in years. But one particular insect that I keep looking at is this dragonfly. It's in your logo and it's all over everywhere. Why out of all the creatures could you choose? Did you choose one of the prettier ones?
First, office side of it. One, we do not kill dragonflies.
Okay.
Two, it looks so much better to pull up to someone's house with a pretty picture of a dragonfly than it does, especially when they're already in fear, freaking out about bed bugs or roaches.
Sure.
Their anxiety is high enough to show up with that all over your vehicle and it broadcasting it to the neighbors if that's why you're there. We actually went back and forth for a while and I surveyed a lot of our clients about whether or not we should even put our name on our trucks because I didn't want anyone to ever feel that way or be embarrassed that they had a problem.
I would have never thought about that.
Yeah. And then when we did our logo and how pretty it was, I was like, I think we're okay. I think that people will expect that this is exceptional and they'll like it and they won't be upset if we're in their driveway. So that side of it was the prettiness was me, but function.
Yeah. I think part of it's from movies and everything that we've always seen, but everyone assumes the worst when you see a pest control truck. Dragonflies are pretty badass, if I'm being honest. They're the assassins of the bug world. They eat 10 times their weight in mosquitoes in a day. They're awesome. If we didn't have dragonflies around, the mosquitoes probably would have taken us out a long time ago.
That's incredible.
And they'll pretty much eat anything, too.
So how do we get more of them? How does that happen?
I don't know. That's a good idea, though.
Yeah. Is that people often talk about, and rightfully, the bees and how we need to foster more so we have more bees around. But it sounds like this is another one of those insects that almost needs a little love. I wonder if there's anybody who is working on that cause.
Cultivating dragonflies.
That's pretty neat. Let's talk a little bit about the business itself. Obviously, folks need help with pest removal, but it's not always a crisis, right? There's a lot of, I guess we'd call it maybe preventative maintenance that I think folks are more and more becoming accustomed to and realizing the value of. Can you talk to a little bit about how that sort of not infestation work goes for you and your clients?
Yeah, so that's actually the majority of our business.
Sure.
And we start early spring as soon as the weather allows, which is very important to wait that it's not going to go below freezing, as that will dilute the chemical and not it won't work. But that doing preventative treatment on your home ensures that you're not going to get a problem later on, like stinging insects inside your living room. It's never a guarantee.
Sure.
You know, every property is different. So we do our very best. And that's why we also guarantee it through the season as well, is that if someone, you know, August is calling and saying that they have a nest, we go back out and take care of it at no charge.
Yeah. As a homeowner, just there are a lot of things that can be doing damage that you don't even realize. Something like carpenter ants, they will only nest in wood that is dry rotted or water damaged. They want it to be softer and easier to chew through.
See.
So they won't necessarily go after healthy wood, but things like window frames, door frames, thresholds, those are all going to accumulate water before any other part of your house. And there can be a carpenter ant nest in a window frame for years. And you don't know, unless they're discarding the sawdust visibly somewhere, or their pheromone trail happens to pass through the house where you're visibly seeing ants every single day. They can be in there doing a lot more damage than was already there, but from the water damage, they can be making it a lot worse without you even knowing.
And the ants too, the preventative treatment. If you're new to the home and you have no idea if that home had a carpenter ant problem before, a lot of times the next season, the new nest is coming along and they're looking for their new home. They're going to look for the work already done for them.
Gotcha.
It's easier. So if you're not getting a preventative treatment, there's already tunnels and things like that made, then they're going to be moving into that. And then you're starting a new nest and a new problem.
Same thing with carpenter bees. They do the same thing.
Yep.
They, on the exterior, all is a 3/8 inch hole, and you don't realize that they're turning your fascia boards into Swiss cheese. They'll go in there and hollow out feet long tunnels inside of that, what it only looks like a 2x4. And I've actually had customers that were got to the point where those boards had to be removed, and it's amazing how there's almost none of it left on the inside.
Once
you can actually see it. But
funny story about carpenter bees. We have a small little pergola outside of our bedroom door, and every year we get carpenter bees there, and it drives him crazy and he wants to take care of it, but I won't let him because I love to watch them. I can learn more. So we have lots of holes, and it's going to have to come down soon. But I think maybe one more year.
It's your research lab.
Yeah, it really is. I love watching them. I sit right below them to watch.
That's awesome.
And they don't sting either. They bite. A lot of people think that they're dangerous because they sting, but they just bite.
No,
it does hurt.
They're territorial. So honestly, a lot of times people don't even see the actual holes that they make. They just see what they think is a bumblebee hovering around the side of their house for no reason. That guy's actually the doorman. He's a guard.
Oh, wow.
He's a guard bee. So he just sits there and makes sure that only bees from his colony are entering that nest. Because what they'll do is wasps and hornets and yellow jackets, they all eat each other's larvae. So a wasp will try to sneak into a carpenter bee nest and take their larvae out of there before they hatch. And so they literally have one designated bee that's posted at the front door to make sure nobody else is coming in.
That's wild. So with this preventative maintenance, is there just one thing that you put down for all these different creatures, or do you have to take different approaches? How does that work?
No, there's definitely different products for different
situations in different pests. But as far as the preventative stuff, there are definitely a few that we've found over the years have a better residual effect than others and stand up to the weather better and longer. Typically, the bigger factor is where it's being applied. When we're treating a house for something like ants, the foundation is usually the most important area. Whereas with something like stinging insects, it's going to be the eaves and the overhangs and things that are higher up. But yeah, there, if you think the product aisle at Home Depot is extensive, there's, when it comes to professionally, there's
I could imagine
a lot of options.
I could imagine. Talk to me about stink bugs. Like what?
Hate them.
They just, am I right in thinking that they just appeared? Oh, I'm assuming they migrated from somewhere else.
Right.
I remember these when I was a kid.
So six, seven years ago, it wasn't even a service that we offered, because they weren't anywhere near as pervasive. But yeah, they are not native to the U.S. They come from European countries, whether it was on shipping containers or freight, whatever. They got here. And the real problem is we have, in the U.S., they have no natural predators.
I see.
There's nothing eating them. There's nothing controlling their population at all. So they've just been reproducing.
Are there creatures in the other parts of the world that eat these things?
Yeah, there's a few different, one of which being a wasp. It's a really tiny little wasp that lays its eggs inside of the stink bugs.
Oh, wow.
And once they hatch, they eat their way out.
But, of course, they didn't find their way over here as well.
No, actually, the state was talking about introducing them to New York State because it's become such a problem.
That's incredible.
But yeah, now we spend 2 months in the fall, 6 to 8 weeks in the fall, treating four stink bugs preventatively. So that's the thing, is that people don't, you notice them in the wintertime when you're inside. But what happens is that we call them fall invaders. There's a few different cluster flies, stink bugs, box elder bugs. But when the temperature starts to drop in the fall, basically as soon as it goes below 40 degrees, that's their signal. They all start trying to make their way somewhere. In nature, it would a lot of times be either underground or in behind the bark of a tree. They just need enough residual heat to keep them alive through the winter. So with our homes, it's in our siding, our window frames, our door frames, and then the residual heat from the house slowly draws them inward through the winter months. And you're sitting in your living room and hear one buzzing around inside of your lamp on your end table. But
and usually by that time, we're like, it's too late to do anything. It's really important to get the preventative done for them, because once the snow hits, we can't do anything on the exterior. Yeah. So then you're talking about interior treatments. And a lot of times when clients call, I said, this is a personal preference. It's how you feel about it. What we use is used in schools and hospitals. We take precautions, but you are still putting a pesticide inside your home.
It's pretty strong. So
you need to decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all it's going to do really is kill them off quicker so that they're not crawling or flying around the house, but they're already inside of your house at that point. So yes, it's going to stop them. So you're not having to pick them up with a tissue and put them in the toilet or whatever, but they're already in there at that point. So it's...
And what about those others? And I feel like it's not the same thing, but there's a very similar kind of red-winged bug.
Black and red.
Yeah, it seems to hang out with
those.
I don't know if they're related at all. But
they're box elder bugs. They mate in female box elder trees. So how many box elder bugs you have around your house is directly correlated to how many box elder maple trees are on your property or in the surrounding area. I'll have to get you some pictures, but I've seen houses, two-story houses, just black from roof to foundation, completely covered. And it's really the same thing as the stink bugs. And people will see them for a week or two and maybe don't see them anymore. And they think that's the end of it. And 3 months later, they're
just seasonal. Yeah.
They're working their way into the house. So
that's and wild. Something important with the preventative part for both of those is they're still all over my house. And after we do the preventative treatment, you want them to land on the house, because that's what's going to kill them, to keep them from nesting inside doors and window frames. Well, a lot of times we have to educate on that. We're like, no, it's okay that they're going on the house. We just don't want them in the house.
So they take the bait.
So yeah, exactly.
They've got to land on it to come into contact with it for it to be effective. Right. But if I could put a bubble around someone's house and make it so nothing ever landed on it, I'd
a lot richer, man. Yeah.
Earlier when we were talking about termites, you mentioned how that's mostly a southern thing, incredibly rare here. What's some other just really unique, out of place creature, insect that you've encountered here in New York that maybe traveled here from some other place or something like that? Something you didn't expect to find. Is there anything that comes to mind like that, that we don't see those very often around here?
The spiders are always, every season there's new spiders that we haven't seen before, which is fun.
And rats. Really?
Yeah, rats.
Really?
In the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, it's less than that, last couple few years, but the rodent population has more than quadrupled. It's exploded since 2020, mainly because we haven't, up until this year, we hadn't been getting any snow in the wintertime. So they don't, something like mice won't hunker down and go into survival mode for the winter until there's about 3 inches of snow on the ground. And so the last 2 or 3 years without any snow, they've just been reproducing year round. And so I mentioned my father did this before me. The 15 years previous, he had only ever encountered rats once or twice.
Wow.
And we've got dozens of active properties right now. And in areas, everyone just associates it with New York City or a city thing.
Sure.
And it's really more rural areas, farming communities, places like Skinny Atlas, Cazenovia, Baldwinsville, Kirkville, the kind of, it's either directly correlated to a large body of water or a farm. The chickens and rats go hand in hand.
So even fancy people get these things.
Absolutely.
What is, because you always hear that, what the heck is the difference between a mouse and a rat? Is a rat just a bigger mouse, or are they actually a different thing?
No, much different. Mice are much more solitary animals. If they have everything they need, they're not going to leave a 2 square foot area.
Oh,
that's until they run out of food or run out of nesting materials, things like that is when they'll start to venture out, where rats are much more community oriented animal. They pretty much always have a den, a central den, and they're a lot smarter. Rats become trap averse very quickly. So if you're using things like snap traps or something to control them, if a rat sees another rat get caught in a trap, that first rat will never get caught in a trap again. He'll never, or not
he
again.
What's
but,
yeah. Yeah. He'll never go near a trap.
Wow.
I don't know if you've ever seen, there's videos online, but, there's one of a rat that he walks around the trap a couple times, and then he walks over and he picks up a stick and he sets the trap off with a stick.
What?
So that he can take the bait out of it. Yeah. But in general, rats are just nastier. So they carry a myriad of diseases that mice do not. For the most part, if you have mice in your house, you don't really have to worry about them transmitting diseases to you, or getting you guys sick or your children sick. Worst case scenario is over a very long period of time, they can cause breathing issues. And that's literally just because there's so much fecal matter in the home that it's being dispersed through the HVAC system. But rats are nasty and they carry multiple different diseases. And if you're surviving in the woods and have to eat one over a fire, that you have to worry about it. It's their feces carries the diseases. They're just coming into contact with something that they've come into contact with can make you sick very quickly.
Wow.
Rats are much more invasive. They don't care that it's your home. They will look right at you. And
no,
I live here now. We come across it a lot where people, they're just looking at me and I'm like, yeah, it's telling you to leave. They'll stay. We're obviously, mice run from us, but for the most part, rats don't care.
Yeah, on that,
I have no problem attacking.
That's incredible.
On that note, people should, if you're worried about rodents, avoid having bird feeders outside of your house.
Oh, wow.
That's just a neon buffet sign for mice and rats.
Our son asked last night if we could do one. He was like,
the worst case of a rat infestation I've ever seen, it was a gentleman in Kirkville that would go out every night after dinner, and they didn't have children and they didn't care, you know, so he'd bring their leftovers outside and just toss them out in the backyard, and said that he was feeding the squirrels. And I ended up trapping 47 or 48 rats just in they were all living in the ceiling of his garage.
Wow.
And it was 100% because he was putting a food source in his backyard every day.
Don't feed the animals. That's what they try to tell you.
Definitely don't.
And rats will eat each other too. So on that's one dive, they'll go ahead and use their
cannibals.
Yeah. Savage. Use their friends as food.
That's wild. So that's a crazy story. Let me ask you the flip side of that. What is one, you get a work order that's put in front of you, you got a job to do. What's one that you actually get real excited about? Maybe one that's more fun or interesting or rare. I don't know. What do you like the most?
I'm not out there, so I'll say that I love the bed bug and roach situations the most because I find it so interesting and just how they work and what he has to do and the process of getting rid of them. But that's probably not your least favorite.
No, it's hard. As far as the work that goes into it, things like bed bugs and cockroaches aren't as much fun, but I definitely get the most satisfaction out of them because every situation's different, but those are situations where I know the person isn't going to be able to handle this on their own.
Sure.
There's zero chance of them getting rid of the problem, especially when it's in homes or apartments that have small children. I've seen kids I've seen a kid go out into his kitchen and he knows he has to tip the cereal box upside down so that the roaches fall out before he pours his cereal.
Oof.
And they're not understanding the different toxins and things they're coming into contact with by living that way. So I definitely get the most satisfaction out of those situations, but in the moment they're not very fun.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Full Tyvek suit and
nest removals are
that.
That's excited fun. About nest removals.
Getting rid of hornet's nests, yellow jacket nests, things like that.
Interesting.
And I'm always trying to get it. I'm like, we need them at the office, bring them back. And all of them get they're like, Kelly, we can't bring them.
Try to collect the nest after the fact.
You see these videos and you talked about the nests, the bee nests in the house, in the siding and in all that. Also, I know ground bees are a big thing. What do you see the most? Or is it all that, the type that have embedded themselves in the house that people are most worried about?
No, everything. Just from small paper wasp nests. Like when you have a smaller nest on your gutter, if you can visibly see the cells in the nest, what people would call the honeycomb. It's not a honeycomb because they're not honeybees, but
fair enough.
If you can actually see the interior part of the nest, that those are wasps. Those are paper wasps. If it's enclosed, like the traditional football shaped nest, those are a type of hornet. They're either yellow jackets or white faced hornets or something like that. But again, with something like ground bees, that's almost always yellow jackets. The other option are bumblebees. There's also some wasps that dig tunnels out and they're called digger wasps.
Wow.
But 98% of the time they're just hornets that have made their way into the ground. They're opportunists. They like to find a vacant space that they can just occupy.
That's interesting.
And make it themselves. But no, it all depends a lot too on the weather. This last summer, carpenter bees were really bad everywhere because we had a long period where it was hot and dry and they were thriving. No, not one more than the other really, but that's the thing. People, you see a small baseball sized thing that you could probably just knock down with the extension pole from your pool and you don't need to call someone. But when you walk outside and it's a beach ball sized paper nest, then
more of those. Chances of you knock that one down and they put another right in the same spot?
Yeah, they're going to rebuild it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you don't kill the actual wasps.
Is there a reason they choose that particular spot, or that just whatever word for them that day?
No, bad luck, but it definitely tends to be warmer, dry. I can't tell you how many attics I've gone into where it's no one's ever in there. It's just a crawl space above your second floor or whatever. But in the peak of the attic inside, in the interior part, there's wasp nests everywhere because it's hot, dry, but there's also airflow. That's the other thing you want.
They love our foundation as well. They like going in between the bricks. We see that a lot this summer.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah, that's most people think.
Jeez.
When they see them going up underneath the siding, they assume that the nest is in their wall or behind the siding. It's almost always they're just getting to the top of the foundation and then going down into the concrete block.
Wow.
So like, again, another instance where trying to spray that yourself isn't gonna end well.
That's for sure. Guys, if somebody needs your help, how do they find you? What's your website? Those sorts of things.
Our website's allpestwithsyracuse.com. And then our phone number is 315-877-4462. I personally like phone calls more than the submissions on the website. I like to get to know our clients and talk to them and get as much information as I can for our team before they arrive and actually see if there is really an issue or not.
Sure.
But we'll take the website submissions too, because I know there's a lot now where people don't want to talk to us.
True.
It's fair.
And what areas do you serve? Like, where will you go? We know you're based here in East Syracuse. Where do you go to?
Yeah, so anywhere within 45 minutes of Syracuse. It does sometimes, if someone's exactly on that 45 minutes,
sure.
If we can't get more clients out there, sometimes it's just really not worth us going for preventative. If it's a major issue, we'll make the travel. But yeah, within 45 minutes usually, and then Geneva as well.
Mm. Okay. Got a little island.
Just
out
a little
there.
Random spot, yeah.
That's okay. As we talk about the seasonality of these things in the preventative treatment, when should folks be thinking about when should they schedule these spring treatments?
So we're working on winter letters right now, I call them, and they go out next week, usually by the end of the week. And people should probably call before April 10th for preventative. If they call after April 10th, we might not be able to get to them. And I'm always very honest about that. I'm like, I'll put you on the list, but there's no guarantee.
Sure.
Because really preventative, most of it needs to be done for the majority of before July 4th.
Okay.
It's important to plan now.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, no, that's great.
If you call in June, we're a month that booked out a month in advance. And
just for the folks that maybe are in that position, whether they didn't think about it, maybe they buy a new home and close on it in June. Obviously, they're past the preventative. Is there anything you can do about creatures that are invading them all summer at that point, or is it too late?
No, we can still usually help. But again, it all depends on the situation, what's going on. And when it's a new home, it's very important for us to just start with an inspection and have us take a look, because you're new to the property and so are we. And we all need to get to know it first.
Sure.
So we try really hard to customize packages at that point and stuff to make sure that they're only spending money on what they actually need.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Our inspections are totally free. Yeah. And again, the number of times where I people have called us and it's almost like they want me to find a problem,
sure.
or they want there to be a reason for me to do something.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll say, I don't think there's anything necessary right now, and just call us in the future if anything comes up. And they can't believe that there's no charge or that
why didn't you charge me something?
Yeah. But yeah, but I'd rather know that you're going to call us later on when there really is a problem than unnecessarily make up a problem now.
Yeah.
I think that just goes back to that level of customer service. And I'm not sure enough people understand the value of telling somebody no.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they will 100% call you back when it's time when they genuinely need it, and they won't think twice. A lot of the things we've been talking about is around your house. How much, if anything, is stuff that you do on the property? Say I've got a couple acres. Is there anything that you would do away from the house around the land?
So the law is strict on that.
Yeah.
Ground bees obviously is something that we can take care of.
It's only in specific instances. If there's, we have a customer in Skinny Atlas that was out, like you were saying, on his four-wheeler out on his property, and he thought they were hummingbirds at first, but they were actually European hornets, which the European hornets are about anywhere from 2 to 3 inches long and big around as a roll of dimes.
They're so cool.
They're huge.
They sound like hummingbirds.
And they look, so he thought that it was that, but they had found an old dead apple tree, but it was a path that his children walked and rode four-wheelers and everything. So yeah, we can take care of specific instances, but again, there's preventatively applying pesticides in a broad open area like that just doesn't make sense.
So you're saying all those people like fog the backyard for mosquitoes and things like that, that's not necessarily, they just set those things off and throw them in the woods, let them go. Does that
Any
effectiveness?
It can be effective, again, situationally, for a short period of time. We would recommend people have that done if there's you're having a wedding that weekend or a cookout or a party, or for the most part, once it rains,
I see,
it's not going to work anymore. The products that you're allowed to use in a broad area like that are a lot more sensitive to the weather and will lose their effectiveness once they're exposed to the elements for that long. So,
what about some of the most like common traditional bug things, right? So a citronella candle or the old bug zapper, those are always really fun to watch. Is there truly some effectiveness to any of those, or is like those candles, is that just another case of burning some chemicals that aren't really doing a whole lot?
Well, a lot of, with mosquitoes, and we don't treat for them. We found another company, a friend of ours who owns a company that does, so we always refer to him because he does a really great job. But mosquitoes are usually in a body of water somewhere nearby. Yeah, I guess when you're sitting out on the deck, if you wanted to light one, but
yeah,
if you're not finding the source of the problem, you're still going to be dealing with them.
I always thought they were interesting because they're supposed to be bug repellent candles. And usually by the end of the night, there's just bugs around them everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, didn't repel a whole lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, there are newer things that I think maybe work a little bit better for backyards. I've drawn a blank on the name of them right now. They actually sell them at Home Depot. And for I normally wouldn't recommend any of that stuff, but it's a battery powered thing, and it can either sit stationary or clip onto your belt or something, and it, whatever they say, it's 15 to 30 feet of protection, but I've actually seen firsthand that they are effective.
Sounds like that's just radiating whatever repellent.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's pretty neat. So guys, I think this has been a great first All Pest Cast. I really love learning about these things. And it's funny because every conversation that we have, we just keep getting into more and we can go down this rabbit hole forever, which is really interesting. And I'm so glad that we're able to share these interesting, but also really useful tips for folks here in Central New York. Ray, Kelly, I'm Matt from Growth Mode Content. Tune in next time to the All Pest Cast, and we'll talk about some more.